Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. My name is Fabien Bellamieux from the Registry Services team in the Global Domains Division of ICANN. Welcome to our session today. This is a meeting with the implementation review team for the IGO, INGO Identifiers Protection Policy implementation. Before we start, I would like to go around the table and if we can have everyone introduce themselves and specify whether they are a member of the implementation review team. And if they are not and volunteers to join, please take the opportunity to let us know. So can I start with you, Barry?
Barry Cobb, assisting ICANN staff.
Frankfurt, IPC. And Emerald team.
Jean-François Van Den Engen, Name Shield.
I'm Laurie Schulman. I'm a member of the IRT. I'm also a member of the current working group.
Cisco Arias, ICANN staff.
Mary Wong, ICANN policy staff, assisting the implementation team on this project.
Lars Hoffman, ICANN policy staff, assisting Mary Wong.
Dean Doreen, member of the working group at IRT.
David Maher, member of the working group.
Mert Zucker. ICANN staff.
Aisha Gutekje, ICANN staff.
Great, thank you for the introductions. So let's review our agenda for our meeting today. We'll spend a little bit of time on the background of the policy and the current work going at ICANN around IGO and NGO protection. We will then move on to presenting the approach that we're taking to this implementation status. And finally, we'll try to take as much time as we can for timing here is just to give you a sense of where we'd like to go. We wanted to spend a little bit of time on the background in our first IRT meeting that we had. Sense that there may be, this could be quite confusing. So what this diagram shows is all the current the work that's ongoing right now. So when you look at the top left, these lines is the origin of time of group on the protection of identifiers of IGO and NGOs in all GTLDs. This led the work of this working group led to a resolution by November 2013 to work to potentially initiate on the curative rights was actually a PDP initiated in June. In the history of time, there has been two working groups, one by identifiers and one on the rights mechanism. The one working group on IGO identifiers got to the conclusion, to its recommendation in the final report, which we'll discuss in terms of how they were adopted. But then this working group work, and the working group on the curative rights one is still ongoing today as a PDP. So in terms of the recommendation made by the Identifiers Protection Working Group, those were considered by the board, and there was a board resolution in April 2014 that adopted a part of those recommendations, and that's and we'll look at exactly what those were. And the other part of those recommendations, and so this part that were adopted is what we're currently working on in the UNGO Identifiers Protection Policy implementation. And the other part of the recommendation that were not from the PDP working group, not adopted yet by the board, are part of a, they're still being considered and part of a recreation effort between the NGAC and the GNSO. And the distinction really here between those recommendations that were adopted by the board and those that weren't, whether they were consistent or inconsistent with GAC advice.
All right, acronym challenged NGPC. That one I don't remember.
New GTLD Program Committee.
Okay.
So this is the New GTLD Program Committee of the ICANN board. Apologize for the variety. So we have those three components ongoing, and what we should note here that. So I wanted to make it clear that today three pieces of work are still ongoing. They're all alive. But they belong to a different stage of policy development and implementation. So the working group on the curative rights protection mechanism is a policy development. The reconciliation of the recommendation made by identifiers is board consideration stage, while our work is already is in the policy implementation stage, and that's for the record adopted. by the board with respect to... Make sense to everyone? Any questions, comments? We wanted to clarify those distinction to make sure that our scope of work here in this meeting and this IRT is clear. So let us know if there is still like to make sure that this is clear. So the scope of this IRT eventually will be to consider all those recommendations that will be adopted by the board. I mentioned that currently there is a set that's been adopted and we'll look into it. There is a set that is still under consideration, but eventually when it's finalized and leads to recommendation by the board, by resolution by the board, then this will reincorporate the scope of our work. What we're seeing as the eventual scope of this IRT. So the recommendation on the protection of INGO identifiers rely on the definition of a precise scope. So I just want to review with you this scope. Again, this is also clear in everybody's mind when we approach our work. There are four main categories of identifiers, cross and red crescent movement, those of the IGOs, international governmental organizations, those of the INGOs that are not Red Cross or that are not from the Red Cross and Red Crescent movement, and that each of those may have specification of their scope. So let's look at those specifications. For the Red Cross and Red Crescent, we have scope 1, a distinction between scope 1 and 1 is those names of the which correspond to the federation, correct, of the Red Cross and Red Crescent movement. 2, and so those four names are protected in the UN, about the 189 national societies' names, plus some other federation names, and those are protected, plus the acronyms that are listed there. Those are protected, the names in English plus. This is a bit complicated, but so we're sure that we've listed this and this can become a reference. To the International Olympic Committee, the names that are protected are Olympic and Olympiad. There are here two scopes. And the reason it's important to distinguish scope 1 and scope 2 is they're afforded potentially different protections. So this is one is the full name of the organization as listed on a list provided by the... Two is the acronyms of those organizations. Finally, with respect to INGOs, reference here is to the COSAC list. One is the names of those organizations that are all consultative status, in English only, about the special consultative...
thought that the non-governmental organizations had been excluded in the first of this.
We will review in the next slide, if you allow me to that slide, and we'll see exactly what is the scope of... Any questions on the scope of the identifiers? So let's move on Let me talk to the protections of those various identifiers. So in terms of protections that were recommended by the policy, the PDP working group, and adopted by the GNS Council, there were top-level protections and second-level. Level protections are at the top, second are at the bottom of this. We make a distinction then between those that were adopted, condition that were adopted by the board in its resolution of April 20, those that were not adopted and that are currently still under consideration in the reconciliation process that I've mentioned. So at the top level, protection, so we can maybe get to your question directly, David, with respect to INGOs, in the adopted recommendations by the board, we have one of those names at the second level via claim services, 90-day claim services. We are working towards the implementation of those protections. They were adopted by the board. So let me take a step back and review the overall. So at the top level, we have section of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Scope 1 identifiers via reservation at the top level. We have the IOC names. We have the IGO 1, IGO Scope 1, which are the full names. INGO general, the answer to your question, David, that's the protection of the general list at the top level. Finally, we have the protection of scope 2 of the Red Crescent identifiers. That's being reconciled because of the inconsistency between the GNSR GAC advice on this topic. Second level, it was recommended and adopted by the board that scope 1 of Red Cross Red Crescent movement be protected via reservation, that the names of the IOC be reserved as well at the second level, that the scope 1 of the IGO names, full name, are reserved at the second level, and that all the names on the ECOSOC consultative list claim services for 90 days. And in terms of recommendations that are still being considered at the second level, those pertain to scope 2 of Red Cross, Red Crescent, and IGOs. So this is probably very difficult to swallow, and that's why we made this slide, so we can come back to it anytime. It's going to be published. It's going to be available in the IRT's workspace. So please, feel free to use it as much as you need, and let us know if there is anything to clarify on this slide. Seeing any hands raised or activity in the chat? Let me then make sure we all understand that we're focusing today on those recommendations that have been adopted. I mentioned earlier that our eventual scope may include, not yet adopted by the board, that will be that may be the subject of a resolution after now. Today, this is our scope. Considering those things that we here have on the slide, and not the ones that are under recon. Does that make sense to everyone? I'm glad that we have this behind us now, and we can move on to discussing actual implement. So we formed this implementation review team in July. To date, we have 4 registry representatives representing 3 organizations. I believe we have apologies from Sal Ondo from Donuts, who has joined the IRT. We have 6 IPC representatives representing 4 organizations, and I wanted to make sure that everybody knows that participation remains open to anyone who would like to join in the course of this work. We, over the course of our work in this IRT, we expect that the input of the IRT would be around the review of the draft procedures and draft policy language that we will be sharing, that you contribute your thoughts, duration on open issues and challenges we may face. You review the list of identifier labels that we will produce as part of this implementation, our details of our various work product that we're seeing, that we're planning for, and that you would contribute to reviewing the, we will get to public comments eventually when our policy language is ready for public. In terms of resources for the IRT's work, we will certainly be using the mailing list. We have controls like we did for our first IRT meeting and the face-to-face meeting when we can. We will aim to having monthly meetings. Really, in our first meeting, that we would target Tuesdays at 16 UTC, if that because that seemed to work for everyone that had joined that call. If for you, please let us know. And here is a link to our works. Any questions on the IRT? None? What is the set of deliverables that we're working towards in this implementation? We've changed a bit the order of those work products compared to our first meeting, because we want to make sure that it is clear to the IRT members that what we're aiming for is eventually policy language will be listed as part of the ICANN consensus policy and will then become a reference for contracted parties as part of their agreements with ICANN. So with respect to consensus policy, we have started drafting that language. We currently have an outline that we shared very recently, as you might have seen. We will eventually take this document when it is ready for public comment, and this will then become, after review of public comments, work on that review with you. It will become a final language that we will use for implementation. And the status of that is that we've, as I just mentioned, released an outline, this outline in this meeting, and start discussing it. We expect that we will also need to produce procedures for implementation of the various protections. So this is this relates to implementation mechanism that may be specific to procedures that ICANN will need to implement the ICANN side of those mechanisms. And another important product of this implementation is the list of labels that will need to be for various mechanisms that have been recommended. So we've listed here the ones that we're currently working on. We're much more advanced with the Red Cross, Red Crescent identifiers, as well as the IOC identifiers, and that we're more challenged currently on the other list identifier labels.
Yes, this is Lori Schulman. I have a question. When you say non-responsiveness, does this mean you've reached out to individual institutions and have not received responses? Who have you asked?
We've tried to get in touch with ECOSOC. CSONET, I apologize. CSONET, which seems to be the operational organization as part of ECOSOC, manages that data. And this is where we are being challenged. We've been able to install an organization, but not get what we need, which is an electronic version process of their list of name, because there is a public list in a PDF that we can't easily process to transform into labels. I think that's the main challenge we have there.
I would argue there's some other challenges with that list. That's, I think, a very problematic list in my experience. I will distribute some information to the group that I don't have readily at hand today. But as part of, I'm now in IPC, but I was an MPOC up till about 6 months ago. And as part of work we were doing in MPOC, we looked at that INGO identifiers list. We actually tried to ping the websites of these organizations, and we found that over 70% had let their domains go. We weren't even clear that which organizations on that list were still in existence and which were not. So I would argue that there are challenges to that list that go far beyond non-responsiveness. And before we add any extra protections anywhere, I would be very clear about what we're actually attempting to do in terms of who will use these protections and how they will use them, if they will use them.
Thanks. So I think this is a place to discuss this for sure. So we look forward to the information you can share and discuss it. Thanks. Are there questions on Mary?
Hi, this is Mary from Policy Staff. And Lori, thanks for that information. As Fabienne says, in terms of implementation, having something that's implementable has been a challenge so far, and I think your feedback adds a somewhat different dimension, that challenge. So I just wanted to clarify for everybody and for the transcript that not obviously it's not up to this group as the implementation team to change the nature or the scope of original policy recommendations. But to the extent that in the implementation process, this team encounters the type of challenges that you've described that may warrant a relook at that policy process, then I would urge that then that goes right back to the GNSO Council as soon as possible. And I don't mean to sound alarmist, it's just something I wanted to make sure we define the scope of what we do, but also know the avenues open if we actually reach that kind of challenges.
Right, I agree that it should go back to the GNSO, but I also think, too, that when we're looking at implementation, knowing what the challenges with the list are, maybe what we do is build into the implementation some sort of verification, that we don't blindly use lists, that there might be some methodology that we care methodology that we could come up with that would verify that these names and these organizations are still in existence.
I want to mention that we have a queue forming, we have Peter on the queue.
A comment. I presume that we can't do so much now, but in the other working group, where we're considering the dispute resolution policy for IGOs, we have identified Article 6 of the Paris Convention for specified regulations for this. But again, I presume that we can't do much about the list as it is now, but we've seen the examples you mentioned, and we've seen other examples that it may be identify the correct organizations. For us, I know that list is more organizations also than compared to the Paris Convention.
So, and I think that is one distinction between the IGOs and the INGOs. So two things. One is that during the policy process, and Barry will remember this as the primary support at the time, the group did spend a lot of time thinking through what type INGOs might qualify, and that's why the ultimate recommendation was to use the ECOSOC list, the general as well as the consultative, and as Fabian has showed, in different ways in this. So like I said, I think that may be something that may go back to the GNSO Council if what Laurie is saying, and we investigate, and it turns out that we have more challenges than we thought. But in terms of the verification, Fabian, I'm going to throw it back at, I think, everybody and at you. I think this is something to discuss as well in terms of going forward in terms of implementation. What is it that we can do at ICANN versus what it is that we need to rely on each organization, whether they're IGOs or INGOs, to do, and verification may well be one of those.
I'm going to give my apologies to the group. I actually need to go, but this is a topic I have a lot of interest and have done research on, so I'm happy to participate, and I'll read the transcript after the meeting.
And I hear you said you would be sharing some information you have.
Yes, we have a report. It's not a formalized academic report. It's really just a accumulation of some raw results, literally based on making thousands of phone calls and web inquiries as to the status of this list. We felt it was very important in the nonprofit community at the time to understand the universe we were talking about on this list, and whether or not this list, I know to your point, Mary, the policy has already been adopted. There's problems, fundamental problems with the list, and I think it's important to understand that and figure out a way to work with it. Otherwise, honestly, I think it's a waste of time, and I think that it would not look well for ICANN, quite frankly. So thank you.
Thank you for your time. Are there any other comments or questions on this slide and on this list of deliverables we're working towards?
Krista Papik, ICANN staff, so sorry you have to leave, Lori. But it sounds to me that possibly the issues, and I came in late, so I apologize for coming late. So I didn't hear the initial part of this discussion, but some of the issues I heard Lori articulating could really be addressed with coming up with a process for how names come on and off the list. And I don't know if that is within scope this group or if that's something else we would need to ask the GNSO for. But we have policy recommendations that the board has directed us to implement for this list. It is one of the open questions I think we've discussed internally as on staff as to how names come on and off. And that would, I think, address at least some of what I heard Lori saying. I might have missed the first part. So maybe leave that as food for thought for the IRT to consider.
All right, just a practical questions, as I haven't before, the details of the list. Once the organizations are identified, how do you deal practically with the correct address, or also that everything is sent out to the right email addresses and so? As the list is so long, I presume that in some cases one easily make sure that you come to the officially right address with all the connections.
We're in the realm of implementing challenges, so I think this is, thanks for mentioning that, we will need to consider this. I don't think we're at a stage where we already have that, but we'll need to look into it. So let's, it's on the record, we'll keep that going, and we'll keep it for our discussions of implementation challenges that we have later. Before we move on to discussing the details of documents, the outline of draft policy language we sent, I just wanted to come back to timeline assumption we've shared in our first meeting, just for us to think about. This is the current assumption. We're working on drafting the implementation plan, which is this whole set of the work we've presented. We expect that we would be working with the IRT on a monthly basis and work towards releasing a draft implementation for public comment early next year, February, March 2016. Then, based on the public comment we receive, finalize our document measures for a potential announcement of policy effective date by mid-2016, which then would start in a six-month implementation period for affected parties in line with what we find to be our implementation January 2017. So again, this is our work right now at this stage. Any comments, question? So let me, before we slide, show you what we shared days ago. We did not expect that you had provided your input. This was really, we wanted to share the document as soon as ready and took this opportunity to present the document. So I'm sharing here the clean version. You may recall, if you've seen the document, that we have a lot of comments and ideas highlighted. So this is a draft, a very initial draft that we wanted to share with you to give you a sense of where we want to be at the end of our work in terms of definition of the... So we've divided the document in four main sections. At the top level, protection at second level, operations, protection at second level in terms of claim down. So the most advanced section of our outline is... So this is how we're... this is the perspective we're taking to draft those identifiers that would need to be reserved are referenced here down in the document in section 4. So we're saying at the top level, labels corresponding to the following identifiers are reserved from delegation as GTLDs applied for by the relevant organization to the various identifiers that are in 1.2 regarding the application. We're proposing that the application process for the introduction of new include a process allowing for the submission of a relevant organization seeking to apply the delegation of a label otherwise reserved. The process shall require the organization to provide documentation to establish itself as the relevant organization. The application will be subject to all applicable processes. So there are elements where we'd like to specifically get your input. For instance, in the application process, what is the standard of documentation we should find for those relevant, for establishing that you're a relevant organization for applying for a... if you connect this to the policy recommendation, the application process is what the policy recommendation called the exception procedure to the protection, being the reservation of the name from delegation at the top level, and the exception procedure being the fact that an organization may be allowed to apply. And if I come back to section 1.1, here the main discussion point is we want to make sure that the IRT shares our understanding of the policy, the intent of the policy recommendation is that a name is reserved, still applied for by a relevant organization. You may recall that the policy recommendation states and mentions that a given identifier should be ineligible for delegation, but that has a specific meaning in the application process, which may prevent relevant organization applies for such name. So this is the type of considerations that we'd like to discuss with you. You will see that in the documents we shared, we've highlighted specific action on an input, the input we'd like to receive from you on those topics. Any questions? So I wanted to just take a bit of time that section because it's duration by the IRT. So please, page. And if not, we will work together gather your input. I will just scroll down the document to give you a sense of the rest of the outline. So the section 2 would be where we would find the protection of as reservation, where we would also define the exception procedures relating to those protections. We haven't defined yet how these could be, how reserved names could be not from reservation, and because this is really a more complicated consideration, which we'll get to in our slides. And there's also another complication, which is that reserve, when the policy is effective and names are reserved, how do we manage creation of those identifiers that become protected that were already reserved prior to the effective date of the policy. Section 3 of our document is the protect claim services. So this only applies to INGO Scope 1 identifiers. And here we will need to define the nature of the various elements required to implement claim services. And we would also certainly... we expect to need to define elements. The working group final report referred to the Trademark Clearinghouse, but we are careful because we are all aware that these are not trademarks. So we are looking to that as part of the implementation.
Bobby, and just to make clear, what you're seeing here in this draft is a kind of a, or it should be a reminder back to the one slide that was talking about scope as it stands today. So, for instance, you know, this draft will evolve when the outstanding recommendations are reconciled between that C and the GAC. So in state, there will be a 3.1.2, IG.
Thank you, Barry. And finally, I just want to quickly review Section 4, which is where we would specify as precisely as possible the various identifiers that are being... One of the main, in Section 4.1, what you want to understand here is that eventually the protection will be of DNS labels, actual names that be reserved as domain names. So we want to make sure that while the policy recommendation pertains to identifiers, which are lists I've seen in our review of the scope of the policy, we will need to make sure that we can translate that into an exhaustive list of DNS labels. So part of our work will be to define how we match identifiers to the labels, and that will, we expect policy here. And so we're making a reference here to the current GTLD reserve name list. You might be interested to go see that, familiar with it, because it contains already a list of labels that are currently protected under Spec 5 of the registry agreement. And the reason it's mentioned here is that this would be the standard specification of identifiers protected at the second level in terms of reservation of the names by the labels in that list. And the rest of the section really is listing and build as possible the relevant, the list of various identifiers. So this completes the presentation that I wanted to take us through, so that you are aware of this document that we shared. And before we close, actually, I just wanted to mention also this section speaks to the point that Peter raised around the management of and the necessity to handle potential changes to these lists. The policy recommendation was specific about the management of new names coming on the INGO lists, for instance. We think that the IRT should look into those considerations. They are relevant to other lists. This does complete my presentation of this document. Please refer to the mailing list where it was shared with you. We'll also load that document on our workspace. We'll by a date by which we'd like to get your initial comments on this. Any comments, questions? So we've gone through this. We can move on to the next slide. Oops. As we went, I've mentioned quite some of the open items. They are listed here for your reference. Now to move on to our discussion of some of these. Half an hour. Great. So what we're planning to do in terms of discussion is discuss with you those points that are highlighted here on this slide. So the implementation of exception procedure at the second level prior to label matching rules and buyers lists. If you'd like to discuss any of the other points, you're welcome to, and we'd for you to tell us if there are anything else you'd like to discuss. If there is no suggestion, we'll just proceed with points we had identified for discussion today. So in the PDP working group report, there were specific elements flagged for consideration by the IRT. So one of those was, and that's in section 3.8 in our report, a proposed set of proposed options for an exception procedure at the second level. So exception procedure meaning the ability for an organization that has its identifiers protected to still apply for the registration of those names to reservation of names at the second level. So the PDP working group proposed that there is a goal, and a set of goal is to potentially allow... have a procedure to determine whether a request for registration should proceed based on whether a registrant has a legitimate interest in a... The final report listed a set of principles that those that you should adhere to, which are the notification to the applicant and the protected organization upon request of an application, the creation of a channel of communication between the applicant and the protected organization, and a possibility to have an objective, expeditious, and inexpensive determination be made on the legitimate interest of the applicant. There were two options proposed to implement this goal and goals. The first option was a fairly detailed process of based on four steps. When there would be an application, the applicant would receive a conditional refusal and would be proposed to declare its interest, its the legitimacy of its interest to the registry. We would then have 10 days, which would open a 10-day period for the organization to object. And if the protected organization objected, then there would be an independent examination process. An option was that an entity should be allowed to register a protected name if it committed to prevent confusion with the name of or the identifier of the organization. In the public comment period on the final report, or on initial report, I should say, in the PDP working group, there were three specific comments relating to this proposal. The registry stakeholder group mentioned that it was supporting option, not option one. The ALAC shared its doubts on effectiveness of the proposed option and mentioning that the procedure should be inexpensive and fast. Finally, Validus commented that such a procedure should, exception procedure should reflect coexistence principle for legitimate third party. A legal expert is really legal provisions treaties, but I won't go any farther. So I wanted to make sure everyone is aware of those considerations in the final report and open this up for discussion if anybody would, because this is quite a challenging area in the implementation, because we will need to define how those names can function in a way that is or that can work for best as possible to contracted parties. And the affected parties, I should say, as well. Let me pause here a second if there are any comments or questions on this topic.
This is Christine from the National Arbitration Forum. I have a couple questions. So first of all, I don't know how far down everyone's gotten on this plan, I guess. But my first question goes to the goal where a prospective registrant claims a legitimate interest in a protected name. So my first question would be whether the registrant would need to already have some sort of a business, meaning that if you were going to register, if they were going to register one of these IGO, INGO identifiers, excuse me, would they need to have that business or could they be a domain name speculator? And if not, you know, they would need to establish somehow, right, that they had this quote of sort of legitimate interest. And then that sort of also goes to this idea of option one versus option two might vary, you know, what you decided to go with might vary based on whether or not that domain name registrant was trying to register the full name of the organization versus an acronym. You know, because there could be multiple acronyms, but, you know, an entire full name, you know, would be a little bit different scenario. And so those were sort of my questions as far as, you know, have we gotten down the path of considering either of those things?
So to your question, I think we're at a very initial stage. And I gather that the elements you share here are interesting options or elements to consider. So you're referring to potential criteria for legitimate interest. So I think that seems the distinction of what type of procedure would be applied based on how the request would share is also a very interesting path. I think that's very interesting, very helpful. Thanks.
Just to read it quickly, it seems that option two would be the most convenient ones, but still there are a lot of questions. One question I have, once someone has registered, say, make it easy, a version of Red, when they transfer that domain name to a new holder, would it be the same process, or is it, so to speak, is that first step, once it's done, free to other holders in the future?
But can you, unless somebody, do you want to
asking if it can be transferred. So once they go through whatever process, the name is given to whoever, can it be transferred to someone else in the future? I think Barry's saying that that's not addressed in the policy recommendations. So
this is Mary from staff again. And yeah, as Barry says, that this was not something that was specifically addressed in the report. And so maybe if we take a small step back from that, I think the way that Fabian's presented it is essentially the two options that are here, options that were discussed by the working group and presented as possible ways to implement the principles. So I think what's important to remember for the IRT here is that whatever it is, you don't have to stick with either option one or option two. If there is a more certain, better way to implement them, as long as the principles suggested by the working group are observed.
Mary, I think this is helpful as well. Very helpful. I didn't mean to draft this slide in this way, as being what we have currently being proposed and open for us to learn and revise. Okay, so sure.
Christine from the forum again. I just had one more quick question. As you were discussing option one versus option two, and fully understanding that those are not the universe of options, did the committee discuss whether or not the IGO or INGO would be notified in option two? So sort of almost like a trademark. I mean, it seems trademark claimsy to me. So I thought maybe there was also maybe a notification step, or would they just be sort of lurking and trying to figure out?
I'm not aware of the detail of that discussion on option two and whether notification of the organization was discussed. I don't know, Barry, if you collect specific discussion of this. It certainly does not appear in the final report.
This is Barry. I'm going to have to go back through the notes, on it, but as Fabian mentioned, it's very thin.
Under the principles, one of the principles is you can't have that if there isn't some notification between. It applies just when the applicant, the person requesting the string.
Thanks for your question, Mark. I think we will need to have, as part of the implementation process, that covers both. I am not sure exactly of whether that was specifically in the scope of the discussion, but from my perspective, we need to get there.
I'll add on to my action list to get clarity on that as well. The working group mostly centered around the protected organization getting their name. Process was like, and I have to seek clarity for what it means for a registrant that might have legitimate interest in that name. I don't recall that the working group spent a lot of time on that aspect. It was mostly centered around the
I don't see any other questions or comment on this topic, so let's move on. Still in the final report were two main other consideration or elements for consideration by the IRT. First one is implementation of those protection for GTLDs that were delegated prior to 2012. So all GTLDs that are not new GTLDs, we sometimes refer as legacy TLDs. For those, the final report mentioned that only second level protection applied, and that it you have to such implementation which would have to deal with names already existing, registration potential. What was proposed is that when a name already existing in those TLD matches a protected identifier, such name, so when it's not reserved, it becomes reserved, if not already registered. If it is registered, it becomes non-transferable. If it's been registered before a given cutoff date that is to be defined. And if it's been registered before that cutoff date, it becomes ineligible for registration once it expires, once it is deleted and all relevant grace periods are turned. And that's if that name was registered before the. And then the final report also mentions that there should be a mechanism to prevent front running. And that means that some actors may have taken the opportunity of this policy being discussed but not implemented yet to register names that are, so there will be there a mechanism to define as well. Any questions or comments, Barry?
Barry, I'll just add on to that. That second main bullet there is something that I think probably be a priority for the IRT to discuss and maybe try to fully implement before we finish the IRT. I'm not sure how we go about doing that. It's fortunate that most of those names aren't various actors trying to front run against them. It should be fairly straightforward to implement.
Thanks for the suggestion, Barry. Any other comments, questions? Mark?
Mark Anderson again. I guess I'm wondering what happens when the actual protected organism...
Point. Thank you. Point taken. Okay, I don't see any other... Barry?
And I guess just on the first bullet, and this is something for the IRT to solidify, but I think the general idea coming out of the policy discussions was essentially if a name was already registered, whoever owns it is not to disrupt the natural cycle, and that it's only when that naturally almost become available for...
All right, thank you, Barry. The last of those consideration for the IRT is the protection of INGO identifiers via claim services. There were specific questions in point 4 of the final report, such as how will ICANN be notified of changes to the ECOSOC list, so that's to our point of identifiers. How is the protection implemented when a string exceeds 63 characters? So that may also apply to other protections as well. So that's a question that we address as well. And that's valid at the top level, and that's probably in relation as well to the matching of identifiers to DNS labels. So either this, what happens when a given identifier... And finally, how will contact information be acquired and validated for bulk entry? The notion of bulk entry was... The notion for claim services protection, we would load all the information at once in our clearinghouse we use and avoid having to manage one by one version into that database. For doing that, if we are to do this, we will need the relevant information.
Christine from the forum again, is there an aversion to putting any burden on the IGOs and INGOs to supply this information?
Something that's certainly been discussed. Especially with the EO list, because it is quite, I'm not monitoring it quite often, dynamic list as well. So I tried me contacting CSOnet. We made an initial contact, but nothing of any substance. The first part is just to get a workup off of their website. Then the secondary, try to have an initial dialogue with them of sharing management of that in a way that makes...
So this completes the menu of... considerations we will need to discuss and eventually against which we'll need to have solutions. And before we end this meeting, we have one last area of discussion, and those are what we're running into in terms of challenges. So we've mentioned the notion of, we've called in our previous first meeting the perimeter of protection, how we're going from identifiers to DNS labels. Another policy-related challenge is going to be potential impact of an outstanding policy recommendation on the implementation, because it's been recommended by the GNS for scope 2, for the protection of scope IGO. Where was that coming from? Oh, from the GAC advice. That was GAC advice. So the reason I'm mentioning it is that if this were to be the outcome of a reconciliation process, that there is a notion of this may have an impact on whatever we define as the 90-day claims protection mechanism, because we want to want not to have two different systems to manage those. We're being careful of what could be the impact. In terms of purely related implementation issues and challenges we have right now, we've mentioned management of identifiers and contact data for INGOs. And the other one we have right now is collecting two self-selected languages by IGOs. We're working on comments or suggestions or contributions to bring to the topic. Hearing none, I just want to mention that we will be in touch with the IRT via the mailing list to organize our next meeting, and we'll propose a date for your initial comments on these various topics. And we invite at any time you to get in touch with us to use that mailing list to exchange your thoughts on the various elements that we've discussed today. And we certainly look forward to your input and to the work of the IRT. Thank you very much. Thank you all for your time today. And we look forward to working with you.